This podcast is brought to you by Penji. Penji is a creative subscription service that gives you access to pre-vetted, agency-trained creatives from all over the world. From graphic design to illustrations to social media management and web development, it's all included for one monthly price. It's time to say goodbye to the hassle of searching for top-notch creative talent. With Penji, you get quality and consistency delivered right to your inbox every day. Carefully crafted for you by humans, so meet your new creative team today. Head over to penji.co for more and enter the coupon code located within the podcast show notes.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fully Managed Podcast. You guys know what we do here. This is the podcast where we talk about marketing and business tips, and we assist you guys in your business journeys. You know me. I'm your host, Daniela, Penji's partnership coordinator, and I have a very special guest today with me, Gabriel Flores from Latino Founders. Hi, Gabriel. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate being on the call and look forward to having the conversation.
I'm super excited to have you. But before we actually jump into the nitty-gritty, I want to have you introduce yourself a little bit and tell us everything that we got to know about you, including your favorite color, movie, whatever it is that is important.
Oh, man, we're jumping right into it. All right, I love it. So, well, good afternoon, everybody, or morning, or whenever it is that you're listening to this or watching. Gabriel Flores, as mentioned, I'm the president and co-founder of Latino Founders. We're a 501c3 here in the Pacific Northwest, based currently here in Portland, Oregon, and we're helping scale 100 Latino businesses to $1 million recurring revenue. And the reason we're doing that's not an arbitrary number, but the focus primarily is because at that million dollar of ARR, as most entrepreneurs know, that's really when it comes a hobby to an actual job, because that's when the founder can pay themselves a competitive wage. They can offer their employees a competitive wage. And so it really kind of turns into a business. Outside of that, I'm actually, for the past 25 years, been in healthcare. I work at Oregon Health Science University. It's an academic medical center here in the state of Oregon. I primarily focus on business development for our cancer, cardiovascular, and general surgery program. It's been quite a journey. And then I met the team of Penji through my own podcast, The Shades of Entrepreneurship, where it's more of an educational podcast, really kind of talking about the ins and outs of entrepreneurship. So really focusing on those individuals that are interested in learning about entrepreneurship. They're not really sure what's out there. And then we bring on a lot of individuals with software, services, or products that can really help individuals scale and make their kind of road through this entrepreneurship journey a little bit easier. But that's pretty much me in a nutshell. Certainly have a lot of other things. Favorite color, by the way, is red. That's definitely my favorite color. I love golfing, although I'm not the best at it. And I am an avid Oakland Raiders fan. Yes, I did say Oakland. I still believe we're still in Oakland. And for those wondering, yes, I do, in fact, love punishment because the Raiders have not won in some time. So that's about all I have.
That's interesting. I have met people who like red, but not that many. I feel like a lot of people tend to say green and blue.
I'm wearing a blue shirt. So for those just listening to the audio, I guess I'm being a little bit of a oxymoron.
Yeah, that's okay. My favorite color is black, and you know, hard to always. Actually, no, I'm always wearing black. But totally off topic, Gabriel. I think it's really interesting. Something that really resonated with me when you were talking about is how much your journey is on platforming specifically Latino-owned businesses. Obviously, you are Latino yourself, but it makes me wonder what made you want to sort of stay so close to your roots and kind of empower people from your community instead of kind of broadening your audience to any other kind of ethnicity.
Yeah. Great question. You know, I grew up here, you know, the Oregon area. So Mount Angel, Oregon, we're a small, you know, Catholic community about an hour or so away from the Portland, Oregon area. And a lot of the community members, you know, a lot of them are farmers. A lot of them are migrants. My parents are actually migrants, or they're indigenous to these lands. And they kind of cultivated the farming community all the way up the East Coast, down to the West Coast. And you know, really kind of helped kind of create this ecosystem of agriculture that our states currently have. Now, as I've grown up, you know, the community I came up with is all entrepreneurs. There was no big box shop there. In fact, when you go to Mount Angel right now, there is not a stoplight or a stop sign. You can drive right through town. There's about 2,500 people in the entire town. I think I graduated with about 40 individuals. And one of the things that as I've grown is every kind of community has had their moment. And they're all unfortunately driven by some historical, unfortunately bad situation. For example, the George Floyd, right? That the African-American community really came together for that moment. The Me Too movement with the females, and they really came together for that moment. I think during the pandemic for the Asian community, or Love is Love, right? For the same sex marriage. Throughout time, everybody has these moments, yet the Latino Chicano community has never really had a moment. In fact, it seems like even when we have really, really strong issues that present themselves, most recently with the previous previous administration and current one as well, is just the current mass deportation of the community. That's one. And then you also see the length that these individuals go through. In fact, here in Oregon, you can actually look it up, last year during the heat wave, we actually lost one of our farmers due to heat exhaustion. Just having that simple access to healthcare is not even available to a lot of these individuals within this community. Yet we're depending on them a vast amount. In fact, the Latino community here in the United States, we added $1.7 trillion to the United States GDP last year. By 2030, I think we'll be about like a quarter of the entire GDP, over $3 trillion added to it. When you look at the Oregon and the makeup of Oregon, Marion County, which is one of the largest counties in our state, 50% of that school is actually Chicano Latinos. 90% of the kids in kindergarten class in Woodburn, Oregon are Latino Chicano. So, and these aren't first generation anymore. These are second and third generation where their family has migrated up to these areas. And again, it's very important to understand a lot of these individuals are indigenous. So for those that are unaware what indigenous means, is these are individuals that have lived in this community since way before, Columbus sailed the blue seas, right? These are individuals that have kind of resonated from this location. And their focus really is on agriculture, migration. Like my community, we're farmers, and that's nothing bad. In fact, it really, it's not a skin color either. I want to also make sure a point of that. Latino Chicanos, we're not just brown. There's a lot of, my great grandma is a white woman with blue eyes, blonde hair, and so there is very, very diverse ethnicity and colors and pigmentation of our community. And even if you're not from a Latino community, listen, I'm Spaniard. I'm actually half Spaniard and half indigenous. So technically, quote unquote, I'm Hispanic, but it's a community, right? We're all inclusive. You belong in the Latino community just as you belong in anywhere else. And we want to make sure that when we talk about uplifting the community, we do talk about everybody. And currently the Latino Chicano community has been overlooked for some time. I'm not going to say they've been marginalized. I'm going to say they've been overlooked. And I think it's time to kind of give them a platform to really show off their strengths and their innovation and also their creativity when it comes to sustaining and wealth. And because at the end of the day, the crux of what we're doing is trying to help them establish and maintain generational wealth. Because again, like I mentioned, these aren't the first generation anymore. These are the second and third. And so now it's really talking about how do we maintain and build up this generational wealth for our future to continue to thrive? Because at the end of the day, if our community members are not doing well, our economy never will.
It's so interesting because I think it's like generational wealth has never been more important than it is now with the way that the economy is, the inflation. I think kind of locking in your parents, whatever your parents have built and building upon that and making that bigger is huge, especially for communities like the Latino community. Because like you said, I think a lot of people who are not Latino don't realize, for context, I'm also Latin American. So I'm from El Salvador, born and raised. But I think what I realized that a lot of times people don't realize that when your parents are immigrants and then they start businesses in different countries, whether it's America or anywhere else, how much sacrifice that actually takes, how difficult it is. Because when you are a person who doesn't speak the language, and just how much cultural understanding you need to have from a place to be able to just be a business owner and have that be successful. And having, you're sort of like your boomer parents or first generation parents do that. And then being able to take over that is probably one of like the biggest things that happens within, you know, like immigration and something. So I definitely think that like it's something that's so important to have keep growing. And I think that's why like what you said to me was like, it's very important. And I definitely agree that keeping that sort of alive is probably one of the biggest things that the younger generations have to continue to do.
You know, and you brought up something that I think is I would love to point out, because one of the things you said, you're from Latin country, but you're El Salvadorian, not yeah. Latino, right? But you resonate with the Latino community and this the sense of belonging, this piece, because again, from someone from Ecuador is Ecuadorian, someone from El Salvador is El Salvadorian. They're not Mexican. They're not Latinos. No, that's I. In fact, if you go to a Nicaraguan and call them El Salvadoran, you might get punched. Like they get upset. Yeah. No, we are very uniquely different, and their cultures are different too. It's just like calling someone an Irishman who's from Ukraine. Very different ethnicities, different languages, even though their pigment may look the same. But you know, at the end of the day, I think one of the things that we can all resonate with is that struggle, like you mentioned. This sense of the difficulty it has been for a lot of our family members and the people before them to have come to an unknown country and made it. But more importantly, kind of seeing how our culture has also been really commercialized in a lot of ways, you know, and not that garbage.
And I feel like, at least for me, like, it's really difficult to, I guess, I feel like a huge, huge gap when I talk to someone from El Salvador who is here, who was born in El Salvador, who speaks Spanish fluently, versus someone who is born and raised in America and has maybe like parents from El Salvador or even Latin America, because I feel like there's a lot of differences, but there's also a lot of similarities, right? With Latin American countries. So there's like this intersection that you're somehow expecting, but there is also a huge separation between American born Latinos and immigrant kids versus like people who were born in that country and maybe like traveled when they got older or whatever, because the realities that you have had to face are so, so different. And therefore, the experience that you have had with life is so different. And I think what is more like the saddest thing to me, because I look at a lot of these kids who were born in the US and stuff, and I'm like, you know, you're so lucky because your parents did that. And you have way more opportunities than anybody from like this country would have, because obviously a lot of these countries are third world countries. But what makes me sad is seeing how much their culture has been lost, especially if they grow up in very like white neighborhoods, surrounded by a lot of like, different cultures, and they kind of forget where their parents came from. And I understand, because it's probably hard when your kid is growing up in a different country to try to make them be from a country that they're not living in or that they have never been to before, you know? So like, how do you even keep those roots alive?
Yeah. And I think that's what we're trying to highlight, because one of the things like entrepreneurship in general is essentially you're finding a solution to a problem, right? Yeah. And it's usually a problem that you've experienced yourself. And so a lot of these entrepreneurs that we're working with, they're really bringing in problems that are associated with the community, right? One individual in particular that won the Pitch Latino, we actually have a Pitch Latino competition. Check it out, latinofounder.com. Really, really cool. And this is a competition where we have 10 individuals pitch and we give out about $30,000 of unrestricted grant funding. Now, one of the individuals that went through this program actually pitched on an El Salvador crema, because again, crema, right? When you think of crema on everything, crema is like ketchup. So for those people that are unaware, crema is like ketchup. You put crema on everything when you're down there, right? But when you go into a supermarket, you don't really feel this sense of like home anymore, because you're in a different country. And so one of the things, you know, when I was coaching for a pitch competition, well, I was like saying, you know, make people resonate with that feeling of being away from their house, from feeling uncomfortable because they're not surrounded by things that they're used to seeing in the supermarket, right? And most people have had that moment. Either they've traveled for another country or another town, right? And they're used to seeing certain products. Everybody can relate to that. That's the moment that everybody can relate to, right? you don't have to be El Salvadorian or Nicaraguan or Mexican. It doesn't matter. Everybody can relate to that sense of being somewhere and feeling like they don't belong or they're out of place, right? And they want that comfort food. And so that's really, again, you know, bringing in our culture, right? And also recognizing, to your point you made earlier, recognizing a lot of these trials and tribulations that we've gone through and truly trying to take an opportunity to solve those issues for some. Because we're going to see more, in fact, climate migration as well. So you're going to see, I think, a lot of these individuals that live in the Northern California area start migrating now. In fact, we're seeing it now, Nevada, Arizona, Texas, New Mexico. We'll now start to think about, what does that community need? What do they primarily need? What are they losing out of Northern California when they're coming into these new states? Those are your business opportunities. Right. Yeah, identifying what those problems or whatever services they used to have in that Northern California region, and then create something around that. Right.
Yeah. No. And I totally feel like that's like a total, you know, sort of hole that you have to fill, because that's true. Like when you're an immigrant, you're looking for that wherever it is that you are, whether it's like, you know, and I think it's very, you can assume that it's going to be in places like California or Texas, where like the Latino community is so big. I don't know how it is for Chicanos, but for at least for Salvadorians, I know we have a huge Salvadorian population in Maryland for some reason. So I've never been to Maryland, but I imagine if I go, I would probably find a lot of like Salvadorian products, right? But what if I were to go to Virginia, like you said, and there's nothing? And that's like a huge opportunity, because there will be a lot of migration from a lot of these people to these places. I think also something that's really interesting to me is that in America, I think Latinos kind of get sort of, because the Mexican population is so big, a lot of times most of the stuff that you can find when it comes to being related to Latin America is Mexican. And I think there's so many business opportunities for things that are outside of Mexico, because there's also a lot of people from countries like you mentioned, like Ecuador, Guatemala, Peru, that also are looking for that sense of home and probably have a harder time finding it than Mexican products or Mexican-owned businesses.
Yeah, I completely agree. In fact, I would encourage folks to look at a map. South America is a completely different continent than North America. Yeah. Okay, folks. So when you look at the map, you're going to notice that South America is actually not Mexico. I know it can be confusing at times, but now I also understand Mexico City is what, like the second or third largest population city in the entire world. So I understand that as well. But to your point, it's imperative for us to kind of, getting outside of your comfort zone creates innovation. If we can, like, you know, the old saying goes, if you constantly do the same thing over and over again, expect a different result, that's a definition of insanity, right? So we are trying to really expose individual. Now, while I was mentioning this Pitch Latino competition, again, you could check it out, latinofounder.com. But what we really do is we actually kind of cross-pollinate the community. So I was mentioning we get about $30,000 of unrestricted grant funding to a winner. Well, that's at the regional event, so like in Portland, Oregon. However, we also have small community events. In fact, next week, I'll be down in Medford, Oregon, Southern Oregon. It's about 3 hours south of here. Really, really heavily populated Latino Chicano community. Talent, Phoenix, Ashland, right? So this area, we're going to go down there and do a pitch competition. Now, the winner of that competition then gets invited up to Portland in October, where we're going to be at the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry here in Portland, Oregon. We have about 300 people in attendance. And they're the ones that represent Southern Oregon. And they're going to come up with an opportunity for, you know, another $30,000. Now, at these local ones, it's about $10,000 unrestricted grant funding, 30 at the larger one. But the reason we're doing this is to cross-pollinate our communities. Because I think when we think of DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, everybody's probably heard that. I don't want another DEI initiative. I want to feel like I belong. Not only do I want to feel like I belong, but I want to see myself represented across the table. But not only do I want to see myself represented across the table from my pigment perspective, but I also want it from my experience. I want the farmer there. I want the person that actually has lived in a rural community or a frontier community. And there's a very difference. Frontier and rural are very different, and they're very different from metro. Okay, those are the metro regions, right? And that's where a lot of the population is, a lot of the funding is, a lot of the innovation occurs, right? Unfortunately, because that's, again, where all the money is. And so if we can, you know, again, bring out these other ethnicities, other cultures, other regions, even like, honestly, if anybody's listening that's down living in Mississippi or Alabama, please invite me. I would love to try your guys' food. I am dying to go down to the South and try some food. So please, somebody reach out to me. Mr. Gabriel Flores on LinkedIn. I am not joking. I want to get down there. I want to try. Like, I love getting outside of my comfort zone because that's where I learn. You will learn so much more the first time you travel internationally by yourself or with somebody else. Because as soon as you land, all the signs are different and you got to figure it out. And you got to figure it out quick, right? And that's the best way for you to learn about yourself, about your partner, about everything. Like, can I do this? Yeah. And what you realize at the end of that trip, shit, you did. Sir, excuse me the language, but you did. You accomplished it and you did extremely well. And not only that, but you managed to do it and then you survived it. And then you learned and you experienced all of these things. And now you come back to this, you know, you're wherever you're at. And you're like, man, how can I implement these things? I mean, that's how Starbucks occurred, right? He went out to Milan, Italy, saw all these coffees and like, I want to bring them to the States. And now we have Starbucks everywhere, right?
It's true, yeah.
So it's like you create, getting outside of your comfort zone creates innovation. So get outside of your comfort zone, experience new foods. I don't care if you're allergic to onion or you're pretending you're allergic to onions because you don't like them. Try it. Put them on your burger. Stop being a little wimp. Get the onions. And I'm talking to my former self. I swear, I used to never eat onions. I used to tell people I was allergic. Just didn't like them. Now I love onions. It's like, I was telling people today, it's like green eggs and ham. Sam didn't know he liked green eggs and ham until he tried them. So sometimes you have to try it before you know you're going to like it or not.
I totally agree. I went to college in Taiwan. So I had to go. I was super young when I went. I think I didn't, like in my head, I hadn't actually thought it through. I was just kind of like, oh, this is so cool. And when I got there, I was kind of hit with a reality check of like what I was actually doing. And like everything that you said is so true. Like, you know, I was in a different country. I did not speak a lick of Chinese. English was my second language. So I was already out of my comfort zone by having to speak English all the time, let alone having to learn a third one. And the food was so different, you know, like I was so used to like beans and rice and tortillas. And then all of a sudden it's like dumplings everywhere. I think I spent the good portion of like my maybe 6 months that I was there, like the first 6 months that I was there, terrified of the food. Just terrified because it was so completely out of my comfort zone. And then I had to just realize that if I wanted to enjoy my life there, I had to actually change my mindset and like not expect for food to taste like a burrito or what I was used to. And then that would just kind of like completely changed my experience from that point forward. And it actually made me realize how limited my cuisine was at that point.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Like I went to Thailand and I tell you folks, the Thai food in America is not the same food as Thailand. In fact, there's all fresh vegetables and all fresh. So it's really, really good. Cuba, right? I got to visit Cuba. And you know, since their embargo, they have a lot of limited amount of options, but the fruits, plantains, like a lot of really good fruit out there, like remarkable, phenomenal fruit. Germany had some of the best cheese. I want to go back to Germany just for their cheese, to be honest with you. I don't know why, but their cheese was so good. Again, like getting out and just like, you know, experiencing different opportunities, different cultures, different food. It's gonna allow you to see the world differently and hopefully, you know, create an interest in doing something different. At the end of the day, the goal is try to find your zone of excellence, right? We have a lot of core competencies, but at the end of the day, your zone of excellence is something that you do every day and you just love to do it. And you really it just kind of goes by and time flies by because you're just really enjoying it. That's when your job becomes a career, right? Because that's the difference between what you do every day for money versus you do it because you love to do it, you know? And sometimes you have to get out there and experience things to figure out what you truly love.
It's true. I totally agree. And that I feel like that's where the biggest seeds of inspiration come from. Not necessarily from just kind of like doing things by the book. I feel like most of the time, at least for me, it's always been in like the craziest moments where it's just like, yeah, I really like this. or I want to do this more. Like I tried hot pot for the first time and I was like, I thought it was weird the first time. I'm gonna be honest. I didn't really like it. And I was like the thing is that Chinese people, Asian people, Taiwanese people in general love hot pots. Yeah. And so for the winter, every time, like when it was cold over there, it was like, oh yeah, hot pot time, hot pot time. And I was like, I didn't want to eat that because it, to me, it was so weird. And I didn't like the concept of having to make my own food because it was like, why am I cooking? I might as well just do it in my house. I remember thinking, and then my friend one day was like, you just don't understand like hot pots. You probably haven't gotten to like, you haven't been to a good hot pot. You just don't get it. And she took it upon herself, took me to this amazing place. It was like an all you can eat hot pot. And she just showed me, she's like, well, basically you can do whatever you want. She got a really good flavor. And then I remember I was rolling out of that restaurant because I was so full. And I was like, wow, no, yeah, I get it. I love it. And it changed my mind. Like, I think those are the best experiences. And I mean, we actually don't have hot pots here. So what you're saying is true because I could totally open up a hot pot restaurant and it would be so innovative.
Yeah. Like pho soup, like for me, like,
yeah,
like menudo was like my thing. Like that's it. And then all of a sudden I tried pho. When I tried the pho, the Vietnamese soup, if you have not tried pho before, guys, oh my God, that is just, it is a, best don't judge me, but it's very good if you have had too many adult beverages the evening before, following morning, if you're hurting a little bit, go get yourself a bowl of pho. And you're gonna feel right. You're gonna be tired in an hour, but you're gonna feel great for that, you know, that moment of the bliss of drinking, eating that soup for sure.
You know, I said that I love pho for hangovers. I love soup for hangovers. But it's so true. And I love that. And I think like, especially I think in America where it's such a melting pot of cultures, being able to embrace all of these people that bring with them such richness is one of the things that to me make America so interesting. You know, it's like, it's one of the few places in the world where you can go and you can probably find a business that sells what it is that you have in mind.
We got Korean barbecue down the street over here, and then just got a new like Japanese steakhouse. I'm like, I'm telling you that the infused creations, I'm all for it. Again, I'm living in Portland, Oregon, folks. So if you guys want some crazy infused food, please come out here. Again, check me out on LinkedIn, Mr. Gabriel Flores. I will give you a laundry list of restaurants that you should try here in the Portland Pacific Northwest. We are really remarkably known for food. We really have a really, really a lot of James Beard Award winners out here. In fact, Michelin, if you guys are listening, come on out. We would love to bring you and host you over here in the Pacific Northwest. We got our neighbors up here in Vancouver, Washington. They got remarkable food up there as well. But the food, the culinary food with infusions of different ethnicities, in my personal opinion, is really where the food industry has been taking off. And it's really remarkable to see these different kind of creations being intertwined. And I think you're also seeing it with the mocktails now, you know, where less people are drinking alcohol and they're drinking, shout out to Altitude Beverage, a huge brand that we have here in Oregon, that really good mocktail drinks. And again, it's just this creation of different flavors and infuse them and combine them and see what works. And that's like you were mentioning the hot pots. I mean, you're essentially a chef, right? You're getting raw food and you got to kind of create your own little dinner and your own flavors and see what works and see what doesn't work. I do like those opportunities where you kind of get a mix and match. In fact, here locally, we have a place for kids where they can actually make their own pancakes. So they give you the batter and you make your own pancakes in front. It's really cool, really fun. Kids love it. I'd love it just as much because I'm a huge pancake guy, so I can't complain. But again, any opportunity to like, you know, have fun doing something creative. You never know what idea is going to spark or what thought might. Again, the goal is just to have fun and try to find a solution to a problem.
I feel like that's also been the success of a lot of big and innovative businesses right now, especially in the food industry. I think like the idea behind crumble cookies is kind of like that, right? Of like taking something so basic as a cookie and then making it so outrageous. And it's been such a successful business. I've never tried crumble cookies, but I was like telling my friend, like, oh my God, I want to try them so bad because they're so viral.
You'll be addicted. We just got off the addiction train. Probably like when my wife was pregnant with the second kid, it was crumble cookie till we die. I'm like, oh man, I'm gonna explode.
No, and they look, I've seen people criticize them. I've seen people praise them, but I want to sort of have my own opinion. And I think the idea of just like a massive cookie And then every time having a different flavor is so different than what most places were doing with cookies that it makes it exciting. Like, it, you know, it makes you want to try all of these new flavors every week and decide if you like it or not. And I think it's also really smart from a business perspective to never have the same flavor, because if a customer doesn't like it, that doesn't mean that they don't like your cookies. They just didn't like that one flavor, right? Yep. They might still purchase another one, hoping that they'll like the other one.
Exactly. And that, again, to your point, like the two consistents, I think, is like the chocolate chip and the sugar cookie. I think those are like all, they always make those two. But to your point, every week it's a new menu, and it's like, you look online like on Sunday or something, Sunday evening. So, you know, by Monday, like, okay, what am I going to get, the 6 cookies this week, or am I going to go for 12? And they're not as like, you know, they're relatively, you know, they're pretty good size. So what we tend to do, I'm not trying to give any pointers, you guys can do what you like, but we do cut them in fours because they are so big. Like they're filling, they're really good, and they're really creative, like Snickers cookies or really, really unique stuff with like lavender, lavender mint or something, lavender honey or something crap. I don't know. It was really delicious. I don't know. Now you got me thinking about crumble cookies. I'm going to fall off the wagon. I'm going to come back with the thing of crumble cookies. My wife's like, what happened? We had a deal. I'm like, I'm sorry. I was speaking on the podcast and started talking about crumble. You know how it goes.
No, dude, I really would try like a lot of these things. And I think that I genuinely, like, I know crumble has gotten a lot of criticism, but I think what I do think is a great takeaway is the creativity that they have done with it. And I think a lot of creativity comes from cultural things, right? Like whether it's like, you know, like you said, like, oh, I've seen like those Mexican Japanese fusion restaurants, they look really good. And I think if we can see business owners behind this that are actually Mexican or Japanese, it's even more amazing. So I think that, you know, everything that you're doing makes it even cooler, because I do think that innovation does come from being able to sort of come up with creative things from things that have already kind of been established.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, Twitter, folks, was a podcast hosting station originally, and then they actually started to become Twitter because the podcast association was using that software to communicate to their employees. They're like, well, actually, this whole little back thing that we're using for employees is actually cooler than the podcast, and so that's how Twitter became. Red Hot Cheetos. I mean, the Red Hot Cheetos story, right? And I think they just kind of have some legal legalities with it, or nonetheless, right? Everybody in Latino Chicano community, I'm sure you're very familiar with this too. It's like when you get some chips, open it up, put some salsa in it, shake it up, put some limon in it, shake it up, right? Get a little taste into it. And so when those Red Hot Cheetos came out, we're like, oh, of course, why wouldn't you put some salsa on those Cheetos, man? We've been doing it for years anyways. I don't know why you guys have been following our lead. That's why we're Latino founders. We've been leading you guys leading the innovation for so long, where it's not getting credit. So now we're just trying to get credit for it.
Yeah, no, for real. I mean, I was thinking about that because I think when millennials were like starting a lot of trends, I guess in the early 2010s, I remember avocado toast being like a big thing. And I, as a Latino, remember thinking, what the hell? Like, because avocados also became so much more expensive. And then avocado food that had avocado just was like, for some reason, considered gourmet. And like in my head, as a Latin American person, I was like, do you realize how much our cuisine has avocado? And like an avocado toast was just my breakfast because it was just what was available to me. Yeah. It was never this like fancy thing, but now it just sort of became this viral thing. And I think it's kind of happening now with like Asian culture, because I think with Gen Z, I've seen a lot of like Gen Zs kind of popularizing Asian cultural things and food. That have existed a lot before, you know, it became popular. And I think, like you said, like just kind of having these people who have been doing this for years take the credit and be the ones driving that behind it is great.
Yeah. And to your point, the younger generation has certainly brought back like the 90s. And so thank you. Again, like I'm bringing out the Polaroids, whatever. I got it. I still got the box. So let me know when the neon and spandex comes out, I'm ready.
Yeah, no, me too. I was ready for the avocado toast, and I'm ready for the spandex too.
We have digressed so quickly.
I'm sorry, guys, if you're watching this podcast. What you can take away from it is buy crumble cookies
and wear spandex and eat avocado toast, and you'll be fine. You will make millions. Trust me, this is the key to success right there.
the key to success for real. No, but it's great. I love this conversation. I do want to ask you something before we end the podcast, though, because I know that you've also been involved with the healthcare industry. We haven't really talked about that, and I'm just so curious as to, like, how is, you know, like, with everything that we've spoken today, it's a lot more, like, colorful and fun and friendly. But I think with healthcare, we're going into a different world, right, where things are just handled a lot differently. I don't want to say it can't be fun or exciting, but I do think it's a different industry. Tell me a little bit about how that experience has been, or how much it contrasts from something as simple as, like, you know, like, you have being a business owner of things like restaurants or products or things like that.
Yeah, this is great. Healthcare is very different beasts, right? Because, you know, when you're dealing with entrepreneurship and you're dealing like a product or service, and you're managing your own thing, right? You have your funnel, right? You have your managing funnel, right? Your marketing funnel, you got your sales funnel, you got your awareness, you got your evaluation, you got your conversion, you got your purchase, you got your loyalty, right? And so you're going down this funnel. Healthcare is very similar in that perspective, from a relationships perspective, right? Okay, I'm want to build a relationships, because since we're an academic medical center, we do complex surgical cases, right? Transplants and things that the community hospital is unable to do. So establishing relationships and referral pipelines is extremely important for our team, right? But then we also have to deal with the current, as a lot of people have probably seen, the federal administration and the lack of grant funding that is being awarded to healthcare industries for either research or other initiatives. So hospitals are now, I think historically, have certainly leaned on federal funding, but now they're having to think a little bit more strategically in regards to their business portfolios. Mm-hmm. It's very important to diversify your source of revenue in the healthcare industry right now. And some of that specifically, you know, with our hospital, with a research arm, it's looking at how can we commercialize some of our research that we've been doing? How can we take advantage of these opportunities? And so that piece is also in there. And then, to be honest with you, one of the things that the healthcare space is so vastly different than anything else is the political landscape, to be honest with you. You're having to kind of go and talk to your local federal elected officials about certain policies that are being created that either would remove maybe funding to a hospital or decrease the amount of reimbursements back to, you know, private independent primary care providers, or reimbursements back to hospitals in general. And so that's another thing. And then in on top of that, you're also working against this private entity industry, which is the insurance world, right? Where they're very much focused on revenue driving, revenue. But the truth is, our insurance as a country would be so much cheaper if we were all healthy, right? Because we're essentially on this shared model, right? So if everybody was healthy, insurance would be cheaper. But then insurance probably maybe wouldn't make as much, right? And so I'm not going to, you know, the insurance world's another beast. I'm not saying anything for or against it, but I'm saying that there's a lot of different, a lot of different currents that the healthcare industry has to manage on a day-to-day basis. Mergers and acquisitions, I think with the Affordable Care Act, when that came into a play, that certainly did a lot in regards to the cost of doing business. And then once the 2017 tax law came into play, that really kind of decimated really kind of took out a lot of pieces out of the ACA, which made it even harder for independent primary care providers any independent provider to kind of maintain a business operation without being consolidated by a larger health institution. And then this next iteration is, again, since lack of funding, we're starting to see this move of private entities into the healthcare space. Again, public, you know, for-profit individuals, I always get concerned about, because again, they're for-profit, right? If I'm focused on for-profit, I want to turn and burn. I want to get you in and out. Now, granted, I'm a nonprofit healthcare industry, but we do need to have a revenue. We do need to create a profit so we can invest in our future, so we can continue to buy innovative technology, so we can invest into our employment and our staffing. So there's a lot of different nuances in the healthcare world. Now, how that has helped me is really the curation of relationships. Understanding the importance of curating a relationship. How do you curate those relationships? Also, leveraging the, you know, just general business IQ, right? Knowing that how are you operationally ready? And what I mean by that is, let's take for the healthcare example, if I want to scale a service line and say, let's say they're doing 15 cases a year right now, and they want to do 30 next year. Okay, well, we have to look at how many employees do they currently have, and are they able to manage that 15 surgical workload? And if they're at capacity, okay, then how many more employees do we need to hire in order for us to maintain that 30? Now, let's say it's a transplant. Okay, well, are there enough organs to actually fulfill our growth strategy? That's another thing you have to think about. Yeah, like a heart, liver, lung, kidney, right? These are all organs that are donated by other humans. And so like we have to make sure, are there enough of those available for the patients that we serve as well? So there's a lot of these different nuances that kind of come into play. And it's very tricky, especially with the insurance world, because, you know, sometimes those insurance products are no longer in your quote unquote market, which means, you know, you're unable to support that product. But again, I would say the biggest thing I've learned from it is one, empathy in particular. I think healthcare is going to teach you empathy very quickly. Everybody has a bad day, and it's usually like first thing in the morning, right? You spilled coffee, you can't find your keys, you're late for work, whatever the case may be. But the thing about healthcare is you can't wake up, put on the ugliest outfit, and then blame the world for what you look like.
Yeah.
When you're in the healthcare industry, you're there because you're paid to be there. People that are visiting your hospital are either there because they need to be there or because one of their family members is there. They might be giving the worst news of their life, and you're upset because your dog peed on the floor before you had to come to work and you had to clean it up. And this individual has got informed they have cancer. So you have to put that thing in perspective a little bit. Now, that is one of the biggest things is empathy and just like the curation of relationships, because through being empathetic and having a high EQ, you will be able to create long lasting relationships. Because what you will begin to find out is you have to make sure that the relationship is both sided. One, I'm listening to you, you listen to me, but also valuable for each one. And valuable, I mean, respectful. Like they have that. Respect is a core crux of value, right? And so having those relationships and being able to curate those through my experience with healthcare and having this emotional intelligence to understand there's times to kind of be very pointed and there's other times to you know, massage the message a little bit. But also at the end of the day, it's still trying to get the same message across, you know? Those are some of the things I think I would say I've learned from the healthcare industry that has certainly helped me in the business world.
Yeah, I think what you said about learning to have empathy resonated with me so much, because I think from my experience, I feel like when people work in healthcare, they can either become desensitized or they can be so empathetic that they're so unhappy because everything hits them so deep. And I think that's why I think it's so admirable to have anybody working in this world, because it's not the type of job where you get to just clock out and not care. Or kind of just be like, whatever, it's a tomorrow problem, right? Because the people that are showing up there are having emergencies, they're getting the worst news of their life is about to change from what you're telling them. A lot of times I imagine if you're telling someone a very difficult diagnosis that requires a lot of money to fix, you're also creating a massive issue, because maybe they don't have that money to even afford that. And then you're telling them like, yeah, you're going to have to basically invest thousands of dollars in this if you ever want to be healed again. So it's like crazy to me, because yeah, I've seen people who become so desensitized to the point where it's like, yeah, you have cancer anyway, it's my lunch hour, to people who feel that so deeply that it's hard for them to just sort of like let that go at the end of the day.
Yeah. Yeah. And I always inform our staff, like at the end of the day, it's like, this is your mom, brother, sister, grandma, it's somebody's loved one. And when you look at statistics, like within the data world, there's a famous quote, statistics are human beings with the tears wiped away. So when you think about all the data, all the research, when you think of about the pandemic and the vaccine that was created, you also make sure you remember the past. The vaccine was actually created a large part because of all the research through the AIDS epidemic. And because of that research, and look at how many millions of people died during that epidemic, you know, or 100,000, I'm not sure exactly, so don't quote me, folks, but there's a large community that, you know, we lost. And so, you know, really resonating and making sure that at the end of the day, remembering what you're there for, remember what you do, is extremely important. Ground yourself, have your true north. What is your true north? Like what are you coming to work? Cause everybody's going to have a bad day, like I mentioned, right? But what is that true north? What's keep you up? What's going to make you feel better? Cause I'm not sure if you felt it, but as soon as you come to those front doors, all the baggage that you have at home, stayed at home, because now you're here and you're here to help these people, right? We will help you later. In fact, I'm here as an employee, and any OHSU employee listening, I'm always here. You got, again, I always have you folks connect with me on LinkedIn, because I'm always here to help support anybody. I believe that if you're climbing up the corporate ladder, it's very important to grab somebody and pull them up, because they might help you as you're falling down, right? So I'm very much a networker, and I try to connect people to opportunities. That's exactly what my LinkedIn profile says. So again, folks listening, you can visit the podcast at theshadesofe.com. You can also Latino Founders at latinofounder.com or myself on LinkedIn, Mr. Gabriel Flores. I'm always happy to connect, always happy to share my insights, and always just always happy to network with folks.
Awesome. And I think that's actually a great note to end the podcast on. So, Gabriel, it's been so great to have you. I think we talked about everything from crumble cookies and great restaurants to the importance of healthcare in the healthcare industry. But if anything that we spoke about today resonated with our audience, or if they want to get to know more about you, connect with you, you've spoken about a lot of places, but I want to give you one last spot to tell them where they can go and find you.
Yeah, again, so LinkedIn, I'm pretty active on LinkedIn, Mr. Gabriel Flores. Follow me on Instagram. I don't have a lot of followers. El Senior Macho, maybe that's why. But yes, please, that's my personal one. I'd love for you guys, the Shades of E on all the social sites. Please subscribe to the podcast and the newsletter, because again, a lot of the people I'm actually highlighting are local small startups and founders that are trying to take off, and they need your support. And so do the community members. So check out Latino Founders, check out the Shades of E, and please feel free to follow me on LinkedIn and Mr. Gabriel Flores or El Senior Macho on Instagram.
Awesome. Yeah, I will be adding links to the description of this video when it gets uploaded. And guys, thank you so much for being on today's podcast. Follow, subscribe, listen, do the whole shebang. Thank you so much, Gabriel, for being here today.
You've been listening to Unified Purpose, brought to you by Penji. Check out the show notes to learn more about today's guest. And to learn more about Penji, the human first creative subscription service, head over to penji.co. And by the way, if you're still listening, it would mean the absolute world to us if you were to share this podcast with a friend, and of course, subscribe.